You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Guys, the man, the myth, the legend is back from Houston, Texas. Pat, say hello to the folks.
Hello to the folks.
So, Pat, let's talk a little bit of a roundup, a wrap-up about the Asheville City men and women. So, the men last Tuesday went to Nashville and defeated Inter Nashville 3-1 in Nashville. You may or may not have seen the game because Nashville does not stream their games, but I believe there was a young strapping man with a small iPhone that did stream it on Facebook Live. Chris and I briefly talked about this game.
Go, dude.
Chris and I briefly talked about this.
Trooper. 90 minutes of holding up an iPhone. Shout out to that guy.
Chris and I talked about this last week on the pod. It was kind of an emergency pod. We weren't expecting it. We defeated New Orleans in that last game, played Nashville. We kind of assumed we were then going to go to Chattanooga in the semifinal. Georgia Revolution up and upset New Orleans in New Orleans. So we defeated New Orleans the last game of the season. Georgia Revolution go down there and upset them in the first round of the playoffs. So because Chattanooga hosts the lowest seed and we kind of assumed we were going to be the lowest seed, we actually ended up going to Atlanta. Pat, I know you weren't able to watch the game, but we did go into Atlanta, a game that was moved to Roswell, Georgia, on a very small high school pitch. And last Thursday, we went down there. We fought valiantly. We tried the best we could to keep up with their strikers and their kind of attacking force, and we went down 2-0 at the end of the day. Now, Atlanta did go on to face Chattanooga in the final. It went 0-0 through extra time and into PKs. They actually had two PKs called back and reshot for Atlanta because the Chattanooga keeper came off his line early. And Atlanta ended up actually beating Chattanooga 6-5 in the sixth round of the kicks.
Golly. So you're telling me that they went 0-0 the entire game and then had to go to PKs and
yep.
6-5?
Yep. Yep, 6-5 on the sixth kick. So Atlanta
going that game.
So Atlanta did go on to represent the Southeast Conference, and just on Tuesday night actually lost to Miami FC 2-1. Miami FC is now going on to face Little Rock in the South final to see who goes on and represents the South Conference divisions in the NPSL playoffs. So that's kind of unfortunately what ended up happening with our men. But Pat, let's kind of talk about the season as a whole. I was in Asheville and attended much of the first season. This was your first season in town, kind of catching up. I know you followed the team while you're in Texas last year. What are some highlights for you? What did you really enjoy kind of about the team this year, about the club? What did you expect? What exceeded your expectations? And what maybe could we do better going into next year?
Oh my gosh. There's so many questions for me to answer. but being honest with you, the thing that I loved the most was the atmosphere that was provided this year. And that's something that we always talked about off the camera, but truly when you're there at the stadium at Memorial and you see like the sun setting and people are playing soccer and the weather's great, the food, oh my gosh, the food and beer, let's be honest. You can go to minor league soccer in a lot of cities around Asheville, but the beer situation really sets it apart. I mean, to be able to have good drinks the entire time and good food. We both partook quite a bit in those. I'd say the food, but also, too, the atmosphere. You talk about the South Slope Blues and the way that the crowd gets behind it. Seeing how many people turned out for the women's game. I mean, the attendance alone was fantastic this year. I felt like, of course, I mean, you always want to see a packed out stadium. But when you think about it, when you see over 1,000 people coming week in and week out to come watch the Asheville City Soccer Club, and then you watch these games at other stadiums like in Atlanta where there's like 70 people, or it's getting moved, like you just said, to a local high school. It's more than just about the game. It gives people in Asheville something to rally behind, and something that I think Asheville's needed, because we've talked about before in previous podcasts how important soccer, the soccer culture and community is to Asheville, and how it's really thriving here. So those would be the standout things. I mean, the performances on the pitch, let's get into that, Tim. For the men specifically, first this year, we have to give a shout out and great job to Christian Moore Cowell, who is named All Conference as voted on by the people. So well done to him. Who are some of your standout performances? I know you're a huge Cameron Saul fan.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout out to Bruno Andrade. We still have no idea what happened to him at the end of the season. I haven't heard anything official. He missed our last three games, and we 100% could have used him in all three of those games, unfortunately. But he did miss those games, but he was also voted on to that all-conference team. So two representatives from Asheville.
My stat man failed me again.
That's something we'll improve going into next year, guys. But I think Chattanooga...
His name's Travis. Travis the stat man. Throwing him under the bus, Travis.
Chattanooga had multiple representatives. I want to say Georgia and Greenville each had one representative, and Atlanta might have had more than one. So good job, Asheville. Very impressed with our representation on that team. Obviously, super, super thrilled what Cameron Saul was able to contribute to the team in the small amount of time he was actually able to do it. But man, every time he stepped foot on the pitch, he made something happen. He may have actually even ended the season co-tied for most amount of goals, and I think he did that in three games, 2 one-goal games and one brace.
I was going to say, he had a purple patch right there in the middle of the season where he just was, like, when he was on the pitch, just a true difference maker.
Yeah, and I think another thing, you mentioned it off air a little while ago, how when I mentioned the team itself, I think was actually very defensively solid. The front, Mick, the coach, the manager, he constantly was shuffling things in and out. N4 started, we shuffled in cuts.
You were the one who said, Tim, that the defense was solid. I said we leaked in a few too many goals.
Well, that was kind of what I was getting at, was it was very strange that the front, we couldn't score goals, so we constantly were trying to figure something out. But the back four remained the back four almost all season. It was solid. Jamie Smith, I think, if you actually had to go through it, I think Jamie Smith may have been our player of the year, and I think he was robbed by not being either nominated or being able to be voted on for conference. Parker Siegfried did a great job, and yet our goal differential was poor, and we leaked in goals. I don't know how you rectify the two, but I know what I saw, and we were solid, but we are also leaking in goals. Yeah, you can't really rectify those two, but I think both things are actually true. So,
you know, I believe you, because when you think about what we've talked about all year, it's we needed more goals. We needed to score more goals. Like, we were drawing 1-1, and we just, unlike our women's team, we just never really found our offensive form this year where you thought, man, when these three or these four guys play together, you know, they could get two or more goals this game. I never felt once that when we went into the games that we were going to throw up or put in three goals. You know what I mean?
100%. 100%. I think, I don't have stats on this, Travis. I actually believe that if you were to break down the goals between our front line and our back line, I think our back line scored as many, if not more, goals than our attacking unit did across the front and across the back. Now, that was between headers and Luke Matthews and Jamie and Bolin, but I'm pretty sure those wingers and the back four scored just as many, if not more, goals than our front three.
I mean, mostly on set pieces too. That was when we were this year strongest, was when we had a set piece and we were put, like, I was like, oh man, this is probably one of our better chances. Like, I would like to see next year, I would like to see our attacking play just be a little bit, I'd like to see more fluidity, more goals, to be honest with you. And I've said this time and time again, and people will criticize me, but this is from a fan's heart. I'd rather see us lose 4-3 than win 1-0 sometimes. Like, I come to be entertained, to be thrilled, to see, I seek excitement at the games. And of course, I want to win, and I think holding a championship would be the ideal for Asheville at some point. But, you know, like this year, I mean, I know the guys tried, but let's be honest. Like, we want to see goals. Like, let's, you know, maybe next year they put Luke Matthews as a alternate or a secondary striker, like a Marilyn Pelaney or something. Belgium did all right in the World Cup.
So I wonder, and it's something I've talked a little bit to management about off air and just completely casually and off the record about how they recruit. And management has basically said that they don't recruit. It's completely on the coaching staff, which makes sense, of course. And I wonder if the coach who came in, Mick, I wonder if he came in expecting the league to look like it did the first year. I think the team that we fielded this year on the pitch would have done extremely well against the teams that we faced the first year. Things changed. Things completely changed. Everybody got bigger. Everybody got faster. We had players from leagues above us drop down into our division in the NPSL. Greenville recruited well. Georgia picked up players from Atlanta and recruited internationally. Everybody got bigger. We had to play New Orleans. We had to play Chattanooga. Things got real this year, guys. And I hope that going into next year, we make the appropriate changes, because if we don't, if we try to roll out what we did this year again, I'm afraid we're not even going to make the playoffs. I'm afraid we're going to get played off the pitch by stronger, taller, and faster players. I just hope there's something in our recruitment that they go out and they try to address these deficiencies. Several of the players have already said they're coming back. Cameron said he wants to come back. Jamie said he wants to come back. Luke Matthews says he wants to come back. Will they? Who knows? Who knows where any of us are going to be in 10 months, 9 months? But if we can get that core back, but make up the difference with some key recruitments, I think that can make a large difference kind of going forward when some of these other teams who are a little more successful and established than Asheville, they're going to lose players at a faster rate than we will. Because even like Greenville, they've had one player go back to Costa Rica because he got called up for their national team and he's playing at one of their top flight clubs. They sent another player to the third division in Spain. So the better they do, they're going to graduate out of this league and they have to be replaced. If Asheville can keep a core, but then still recruit back in stronger players who see the success we have, they see what the women are doing, that players talk to each other, hey, let's go spend the summer in Asheville. This is the recruiting edge we'll always have over Knoxville. We'll always have over North Georgia. It's that sustained success. It's the biggest thing I want Asheville to attempt to produce. And I don't know if Mick's coming back. I don't know if management's going to bring him back from what we saw on the pitch. If he saved his job, I think he did it those last two games of the season where we went down and we beat New Orleans and then we went to Nashville and we played Atlanta tough. The boys got up for those games. I don't know what Mick had to do with that as opposed to just what the boys wanted, but it was phenomenal and kudos to him. But the thing that Chattanooga has over us, the thing that Atlanta, despite me not it's not that I don't appreciate it, but I don't like it. They have brands. They have images. They have, when you say, oh, we play Chattanooga ball, when we play Atlanta ball, you know what that means. I don't know what it means yet to play Asheville ball. And maybe that's only because we've been here 2 years, and 1 year we played one way, and the second year we played another way. And we need to find the middle ground. We need to find what we want to be. Do we want to be defensive? Do we, you know, like a Mourinho Chelsea team? Do we want to be attacking like a Ferguson Man U team? What do we want to be? And we should continue to recruit that style so that even college players or, you know, recently retired, end of their career college players say, well, I'm a front-footed, possession-minded player. Oh, I want to go to Asheville. I don't want to go to Greenville because Greenville plays this way. I want to play this way. So I need to go talk and seek out an opportunity in Asheville.
Well, on that note, men, thank you for the great season. Congratulations on getting to the playoffs. Women, congratulations on the year. Tim, you said you wanted to talk about the women off air. I'm going to let you talk about the women.
Yeah, guys, so Chris and I talked a little bit about that again on the last podcast. We lost 3-2 to Oak City in the last game of the season. It was super wonky. There was a weird goal that went over Bryson's head for their first goal that she kind of misjudged, and then the wind took it. It was seriously one of the weirdest goals I've ever seen. There was an own goal at the end of the game in like the 90th minute that sunk us. We needed to win anyways. The draw wasn't going to get us into the playoffs. But the thing that has really confused me and frustrated with me, and I've come to terms with it now, but last week I was really having a hard time with it, was that apparently Carolina Rapids, who went on to represent our division, when they were invited to the playoffs over in Chattanooga, because remember, only one team from each division goes, Carolina, they actually didn't, they turned down their bid. And so therefore it goes to the second team on the table, which was Asheville. And I got very excited when I found this out. I literally am looking at like Chattanooga Airbnbs. I'm excited. I'm thinking we're going to go to Chattanooga and, you know, run shop on these guys. And then about 24 hours later, I find out that Asheville actually turned down the bid too. It fell to another team who also turned it down, and it ended up falling to Oak City, who finished the season 4-4, and they went on and represented the Carolina Conference. I think they played Chattanooga and lost to Chattanooga, and Chattanooga ended up playing Pensacola. No, Pensacola beat Chattanooga. Anyways, all of this is to say.
You're speaking to the one person who's like following this right now, Tim. I'm just kidding.
All of this is to say is Pensacola is going to Norman, Oklahoma to represent the entire South in the WPSL playoffs this upcoming weekend. So congratulations to them.
You said Norman, Oklahoma?
Norman, Oklahoma. That's where the WPSL headquarters are, apparently. Okay. Sure. Okay.
Are there even direct flights from Asheville or Greenville to Norman?
No, Asheville, Atlanta, or Charlotte, Atlanta, or Asheville, Charlotte, Norman, and they're like $800. It would have been cheaper just to drive.
I was like, how big is the Norman airport? Like, I know you have OU out there. I've been to Norman before, but I was like, you know, who flies to Norman?
Nobody. You have to fly into OKC and then, I guess, make a two-hour drive, hour-and-a-half drive, hour drive. Not even sure. Norman, Oklahoma. Sure. Next year, guys. Next year. We're coming for you, Pensacola.
We'll see you in Norman next year. Oh, goodness. Can't book my flight now.
I do want to talk about the women a little bit. I want to talk... the two things I want to throw out there. One, at one of the last games, it may have been the last game, it was announced that in the WPSL, Asheville had the number one attendance for the entire year. We average a little over 1,500 people a game, which is just out of, I mean, that is absolutely crazy considering.
Yeah, considering men's games don't even get that much in some of our, for some of our rivals teams.
Yeah, well, not only that, but also how many games were played on rainy Tuesdays? How many games were played on Fridays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays? There weren't that many Saturday women home games. So to get an average of 1,500 at these games, I think is just phenomenal for your first year. It was the number one out of 117 clubs across the country. And again, we mentioned this earlier this year, because there are only 9 professional teams, that makes Asheville a top 10 market for women's soccer in the country. That's insane. And that is awesome. And that is Asheville. And I love that. Number two, I want to talk about how, just as we were talking about how I don't know what it means to play Asheville ball for the men, I feel like over the course of the season, we answered that for the women. I think Stacey Enos put her stamp on this club right out of the gate. We were defensively sound with Parker Roberts in the back and Bryson Lee in goal. We did not give up many goals at all. That last game of the season, 3-2, was the most amount of goals we gave up all season. And again, two of those were two of the flukiest goals I've ever seen in my entire life at any level. But between Megan up top, Molly up top, Lydia through the center, Jennifer Kudrow bossing the midfield. I think we put a stamp on this is what it means to play Asheville women ball. And we don't have that question anymore. So going into next season, when it comes into recruiting, you know, Molly just got accepted to a school in England, so she's going to go get her master's degree over there and play ball. I don't know if she's coming back next summer. I would imagine Megan's coming back. Jennifer's coaching for the Shield. Lydia's an owner. She'll be here. She did injure herself the last game of the season, and I hope she's okay. I haven't heard an update about that. She is active on Twitter, so her thumbs work at the very least. But I think we know what it means to play Asheville women ball. And I think that will help with recruiting. And I think going forwards, that will just help create that identity. We're a top 10 team in terms of attendance. It means something to play, you know, women's soccer in Asheville. And combine that.
There's a huge appeal to playing. If you were, like, look at what Stacey Enos has done this year, the style that we play. Plus, if you were a female looking to play your summer soccer and you weren't in one of the top nine teams, I mean, to come and play week in and week out in front of over 1,000 people. I mean, you said we averaged over 1,500.
Yeah.
That means on like our bad games, we were still getting close, if not over 1,000 people.
Exactly.
And I couldn't imagine. And again, I've never been to a women's soccer game, so I could be wrong. But to week in, week out, know that during your summer season, to be able to play in front of 1,000 people, which is probably pretty great. I say that's a huge draw if I was going to be a women's soccer player right now playing during the summer. I mean, where else are you going to be seen and have such great support too, week in and week out?
And I think another one of the built-in advantages we have going into next year is the Women's World Cup, which I think is just going to further stoke the fires of appreciation for what the U.S. women do and the opportunities that lie ahead for women in college, young women in high school, middle school, and even younger, and how this actually is a viable career path in sports for women and be successful. I don't necessarily know if that's true for the men in this country yet, but in terms of the women, 100%. You can do this professionally and succeed on a national level. And you can spend your summers doing it in a beautiful city in front of people who are passionate and care about what you're doing on the pitch. So that's the Asheville brand for the women. I want the men to figure that out. Pat, let's talk a little bit about what we want to see in the off season from both the club and maybe the supporters group to kind of continue this momentum all year round. I already feel a little bit of a, not let down, but a little bit of the air out of the balloon after the season. You know, we had a borderline sellout for the last two home games against Greenville and what the women were doing. The last women's game was away. The last men's game was away. We didn't get to host a home playoff game. But it's kind of this deflating feeling of now the season's over and it just kind of seems to dissipate into nothingness. Do you think Asheville would support the team throughout the course of the year, or is this kind of a result of Asheville being a little laissez-faire in a lot of things that we do?
Well, I mean, I don't really know how we support a team 10 months out of the year that only plays 2 months out of the year. I mean, you've talked about going to see Cameron Saul play, going to see some UCA games. And I think a big part of being an Asheville City Soccer Club supporter is supporting the local teams and watching local players as well, because we are such a small niche. I mean, when it comes to supporting the team, what I would love to see more of Asheville City truly is a little bit more branding. Because when you walk around town on a game day, you see a ton of jerseys and you can feel the energy. But like you said, that deflated feeling. What I really think it is I'd love to walk through downtown and, you know, like, either a supporter, like a sponsor, or I would like to see banners, posters, signs, maybe like a flag here and there that just remind us throughout the year that we have the team. Because essentially, now that the season's over, no one who's coming and visiting Asheville is going to ever think about the soccer club who's not from the area. When I think it'd be nice to have you know, again, this comes back to sponsorship. This is branding the Asheville City Soccer Club. Kind of like you said, you want to see a branding on the pitch for the men's team. I want to see a branding off the pitch where when people are in Asheville, they at least know that there's a presence. Because, you know, when they drive through, they see McCormick Field, they see tourist advertising. Whereas, like, the Asheville City Soccer Club, you know, sign or poster or billboard just to remind people, hey, we're coming back, get excited for next year. So that's kind of more what I would say in terms of supporting the club. I'd love to see a little bit more of the colors throughout the year. But in terms of getting excited about next year, too, I love to, you know, the local guys, Cameron Saul, recruiting, something that we've talked about. I love maybe UNC. Why do we not have more UNCA guys? I mean, maybe they're not cut. Maybe they don't cut the cloth, and that's totally okay. But, you know, we do have a large social soccer presence here. Is there any way that we can pick up some of the low hanging fruit in the surrounding areas that we may have missed this past year?
I love all those ideas. Absolutely. I think the Southside Blues are going to become instrumental in kind of keeping that momentum up. We talked to Greg earlier this season in the spider-infested press box at Memorial. We survived that
interview. Memorable podcast of the year.
Why did we do that? Because I didn't know how to record Skype calls yet, Pat. I do now. So, but I think the Southside Blues really need to kind of put their stamp on Asheville in those intervening 10 months. Greg talked about how difficult it is. Well, anything worth doing is going to be difficult. And the team's going to provide those opportunities. You know, in September, when Asheville does their open streets, the club's going to be out there with a street soccer game that everybody's going to be able to partake in if they choose. I think Ryan and Jimmy and Alan have done a great job putting players in community centers and at schools throughout the course of the summer. That's awesome during the course of the summer. But now what? What do we do these other 10 months when maybe not the players aren't here? You know, we have our connections with Tom Dealey and N4 and Jennifer Kudrow at the Asheville Shield. Asheville Shield goes all year round. How do we leverage that? How do we parlay these connections? I don't have the answers. They're smarter than we are, Pat. But I would love to see this, just like you're saying. We need these sporadic reminders. Maybe we need to move the kit launch up a little bit. Maybe we need to have these like breadcrumbs of reveals coming up into the season. Instead of just launching something in February, much like Jimmy was saying, for the off-season, mid-off-season revenue stream, which the club needs, and they certainly need it. But what do they do for the fans? You know, do we just do parties during big Premier League games? Do we do something with the Beer Cup over Labor Day? Do we kick this off? Do we kick that off? I don't know what the answer is, but I would like to believe that the fervor is there for it. I think seeing this attendance was up this year and doubled since we had the women's club. There was certainly more merchandise out there during the course of the season. Just like you were saying, I want to see it in the off season. I want to see, you worded that perfectly, the branding of the club in the community. It's got to get bigger, because that's how it will get bigger on the pitch.
But you're right. Like, what you're really getting at, I feel like, is how do people not forget about the Asheville City Soccer Club? Yes. by next year? I mean, and to be honest with you, this is what Ryan, Jimmy, Allen, and all those guys have to get to worry about all year. And if there's anything that we can do to help them, we'd be happy to help. We just are giving our two cents. And again, we don't have marketing degrees, and you guys are smarter than us. But I would just love to see, you know, driving through downtown, you see the tourists, you see like there's so many things about Asheville that are marketed. We are such a touristy town that with our really great logo and our identifiable colors, we should just try to find a place where, you know, there can be little reminders here and there. And again, this is just something that me and you have been talking about. We haven't even thought that deeply into it. But, you know, I think I would love to see one thing where if we were driving through Asheville, something that just represented the club, that 365 days out of the year, whenever you drove by it, you're like, ah, the Asheville City, that's the Asheville City Soccer Club's blank, or that it just reminds you of it, you know?
Yep.
Because, I mean, we're all on Instagram, and of course, or in social media platforms in our own shape or form, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you use. And, I mean, the things that we care about and the people who are researching, like data mining, they know what we like. Well, they know to put those things in front of us every single day. I mean, why shouldn't the Asheville City Soccer Club have something out in front of us every single day?
I would like to see the city get behind the team more. I mean, obviously, Memorial's a city-owned park. We don't, the city itself, you brought up this point earlier too, and I think it's a very, you know, poignant point, is that Asheville just isn't a sports city. No matter what we try to do, it just won't be. There's a reason that we don't have a wide amount of sports bars. There's a reason why, you know, we've had the altitude and the smoke come through town and fail. The tourists are an institution. They're not going anywhere.
He's mentioned the altitude, the smoke. Oh, those were the days. Those were the days.
Our high school teams, you know, traditionally do okay. Some of them win state championships. Some of them are very good. But in terms of any sort of upper level post-secondary education, you know, UNCA's men's basketball team does fairly well from time to time. We have tennis that does fairly well in town. But the city itself
if we're going to be honest, the two closest sports teams that have produced greatness in the past few years that are close to Asheville are Clemson University, having won a football championship, and in the past, UT Knoxville, which has really great sports. But, I mean, you just look around us. It's 2 hours to Charlotte to watch the Panthers and the Hornets. And to my knowledge, I listen to sports radio a lot, not a lot of the local radio, but sports radio. But when I have listened to the local stuff, we don't talk about the Hornets very often. I never hear about Hornet talk very often. I hear about the Panthers, of course. But, I mean, growing up here in Asheville, I didn't remember where our sports station was, because we're not that oriented. But you go to a place like Texas, and like a city like Houston or Dallas, and there's so many sports stations to listen to. But again, people don't come to Asheville for the sports. We come to enjoy the beautiful scenery, to enjoy the beer, and that's the uphill battle that Asheville fights. But again, the fact that they serve beer, have great food trucks, I mean, that it's undeniably one of the reasons why we have such a big attendance. I mean, I'll be honest with you, every time there was a game on a Tuesday or a Thursday, I was like, dude, I'm making it a date night. I'm going to go get some food there. So, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why our women did so well too, is because, you know, I could go, we as a group could go have a few beers and watch a soccer game on a beautiful evening.
Yeah, the ancillary accoutrements, basically, to the on-field pitch product in the stadium, I don't know that any other team in the NPSL or certainly the WPSL, who in the Carolina Conference could compete with what we had. Greenville was at Furman. They had a beer chale and tailgating. Chattanooga's in Finley Stadium, so they had some options there. Silverback Park is basically a rec field. New Orleans is on that weird football field sort of situation. We by far have the environment. More power to us. Guys, the South Slope Blues, management. Yeah, I mean, even if the players can figure something out, we're here. We'll always promote you guys. We love you guys. Throw us some ideas. Anybody listening to this, your_smarter, @your_smarter on Twitter, yoursmarterthanus@gmail.com. Shoot us some ideas. Let us know what you would like to see the South Slope Blues and maybe the club management do in the off season. Pat, we were really wrong about the World Cup, my man. What happened?
We were really, really wrong. We made some really bold predictions trying to be really right our first times. And this is why you don't go big in Vegas going on like, you go big in Vegas. You just don't go big on one thing. And we didn't play it safe. And we were way wrong. Emil Forsberg, whatever. Who was the breakout? Kylian Mbappe. We all, you know, for those of us who watch and follow soccer, Kylian Mbappe has been a big enough deal that it's hard to say he was the breakout star because you know how much of a star he is. But for the casual person who, you know, is just tuning in for the first time or isn't really watching anything, did a 19-year-old ever make such an appearance in the World Cup? Him and Pele both. Wow. I mean, that the way that Mbappe every game was a difference maker. You just watched the games, and I mean, even if you scored or didn't score, it was just like he was the player to watch. He was truly a difference maker. I never felt like France got all the way into sixth gear and were playing at their very best. Obviously, the scoreline says they scored a lot, but I think, in my opinion, you look at Croatia, so much extra time on those legs. Every single game after the knockout round was just extra time, penalties. You had to think at some point when they're playing the same lineup and the same guys over and over again that a younger, fresher, I mean, I still think France was a little peeved after the after losing the Euros. What a game. What a great win for France. They deserve it. We were wrong. So wrong.
Yeah, if you think about Croatia playing three extra games in a row, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, they played an entire extra game after the knockout rounds, which is just insane. And still made it to the final. Still beat England. Guys, it didn't come home. I apologize. It just shook out, I think, predictably to a certain degree. We just made bad predictions. I think Brazil severely underperformed. I had them completely wrongly pegged. Maybe that's kind of a indictment on the South American competition that they're going through and they're qualifying.
Neymar's flopping pissed me off. And I like Neymar. But, I mean, it was theatrical. I mean, every game I thought he was like he had torn his hamstring or his ACL. It was just like he it was so much it was too much showmanship, not enough production from him. I mean, obviously they're talented. Brazil's talented enough to have won it, but they didn't perform the way that they had performed in qualification. And also, let's be honest, Belgium came to play that day. Belgium had a great I would have liked to have seen Belgium in the final, a Belgium-Croatia final, battle of the small countries. I think that would have been extremely appealing, a first-time winner. But, you know, France is great. But Eden Hazard, talking about World Cup, switching to transfers real quickly, guy played phenomenal. Will he go to Real Madrid? Will he not go to Real Madrid? For all you EPL fans out there who are listening, we would love your opinion on where you think Hazard's going to end up next year. Courtois as well. Today, officially, we've heard Alisson. Tell me if I heard this right from you, Tim. Alisson signed for $66 million to Liverpool today.
That's what I saw. I don't know if it's official, but it's all over the place.
I was so looking forward to all the confidence that Klopp had putting back into Karius for next year. I could not wait as a Manchester United fan to see Karius in goal. I was more excited about him being the starting goalkeeper next year than any of our signings we've made so far.
Love you, Greg. Oxlade-Chamberlain today, it was announced he's out for almost the entire year. So that's a little bit of a knock. Oxlade-Chamberlain.
He's out for the year?
For the year, yeah. So, but well, I mean, at the same time, Liverpool has brought in, good gosh, who didn't they bring in? They're still talking about bringing in Fekir. They brought in Kieta from Red Bull. This isn't the Coutinho money anymore. I don't know where they're getting this money, but they've got it, but they are investing it very smartly, and I'm very jealous because I don't necessarily feel like they have any more capability or money than what Arsenal has, and yet they're just continuing to buy and buy and buy and buy and plug in holes that they don't even have. They're just finding depth at this point, and it's very frustrating. I'm good for them. Good for them.
Well, they haven't signed Fekir yet, so we'll see if that guy plays up. They haven't won the league since the year I was born, 1990. And I mean, everyone is hypes Liverpool after last year. Dude, Manchester United, let me go ahead and say this. We felt like we had a crap year and we were still second place. We're still king of the losers. I know that, but I'm interested. Your team, Tim. My team signed Fred. We signed some young fullback. We sold a guy. I haven't heard us really like looking to buy anybody new this summer. I'd love to buy this guy from Lazio, Serge Milinkovic-Savage. I'd love for Manchester United to sign him. However, Arsenal, your team, they seem to be making a lot of moves. I know it's early in the year. Are you excited about this year? Are you convinced by any of your signings?
I'm excited. I'm a little sad at the same time because there's already this kind of like gaslighting that's going on in terms of, oh, if Wenger was still here, we wouldn't have made any of these signings. And I don't necessarily know that I believe that. I'm also a proponent of believing that what happens in the winter transfer window shouldn't be viewed as separate from what happens in the following summer. I think so often it's not a continuation of the previous summer's signing window. You often get those deals in terms of, oh, they've only got 18 months left on their contract, let's pick them up now. Hey, instead of allowing this transfer to go into the summer where we have a truncated window with the World Cup and stuff, let's sign them in things. So I actually considered Aubameyang a little, I consider him a in this signing window. So that means we've signed Aubameyang, we've signed Torreira, we've signed the Swiss right back, we signed Socrates from Dortmund. We're bringing in all the Dortmund guys. Sure, bring them all in. I love them.
Oh, yeah, that's because Arsenal got the their scouting director.
Yeah, Sven Mislintat. Yeah.
So I'm excited. Is that actually his name, or did you
make that up? No, that's his actual name. yeah, we've got Mislintat. His nickname's Diamond Eyes. He's going to find us some stuff in the future. Torreira is one of those guys. We just signed Guendouzi from Marseille or something. We're changing.
Are you Champions League bound?
I think top three would not be unrealistic. I think so. I still Man City, you guys, us, and Liverpool are, I think, the top four. I think both Spurs and Chelsea are going to.
So you guys are you think you guys are better than Tottenham, who finished better than you the past few years?
I they're Spurs
with the
man.
Same team with their same team coming back, because they haven't lost anybody yet.
No, but they also haven't picked anybody up, and they basically all went to the World Cup and failed in the World Cup. Because that's what the Spurs do. They don't win. They don't know how to win. They're Spurs. That's what they do. Until they win something.
I was like, but it's hard for me not to make fun of you, Arsenal fan, being a Manchester United fan. You're like, well, besides an FA Cup, what have you guys won in 20 years?
Well, three FA Cups in five years.
10 years. Yeah, I know.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, we finished second once. You guys finished second once. You spent 2 years in sixth place. We spent a year in sixth place.
But we won, but in 2000, and was it 12, 2013, we won the league.
You did, in Ferguson's last year, thanks to Van Persie, which was kind of a gift from Arsenal, unfortunately. You guys won the treble in
99. But, I mean, 99. It's been 10 years.
You won the Champions League in 2009, though, right?
Yeah, 2009 we won the Champions. So, I mean, 10 years, yeah, it's been a while, but you know, in the last 10 years, outside of Barcelona and Real Madrid, who's won the Champions League?
Bayern Munich 1 year.
Point proven.
No, 100%. We haven't had some good years,
but we won our league. I'm not going to hate on the FA Cup because I think FA Cups are. I love watching the FA Cup tournament. Truly, it's a
fantastic competition.
But you know what? For all that you said, you're right. Tottenham. Go win something.
just something. Don't get me wrong. Whatever they win, I'm going to be furious when they win it. But I don't think they have any room. Care. Yeah, exactly. Win a league cup and then we'll chat. But they're just not winners. And that is what it is. What was your impression of Ronaldo going to Juventus?
I have to be honest with you. My first team I ever loved was back in the early 2000s was Juventus. I'm pumped. I watch a lot of Serie A as it is, and now that he's there, oh my gosh, am I excited. I mean, if you're preseason right now, of course, every team is strong. But if you look at that at their lineup and they haven't sold anybody yet, how do you not see them as early season favorites to win the Champions League? Because, I mean, they've got so much dynamicism. They still have Pablo Dybala, who I still think is one of the top five, top ten attacking players in the world, on the team as well. Higuain. They lose Buffon. So if they're going to have Wojciech Szczesny, or whatever you pronounce his name, in goal, they probably won't win the Champions League, because I just don't trust Arsenal goalkeepers. but you know, I love the move. I'm a huge Ronaldo fan. Also, I mean, it's hard to say you're a huge Ronaldo and Messi fan. I try to be. I just try to appreciate their greatness. Huge fan of the move. Huge fan.
I think it's a brilliant career move. I think you go into a league where, you know, you're Ronaldo and you're losing your legs, but you're still faster than 75% of the players in the world.
Well, go he still to, jumps higher than people forget yeah, how high that
is. Exactly. So go to the slowest league in Europe, you know, out of the main four.
Oh, no. I'll argue that. Have you ever watched the French league?
No, I don't know if I would consider that
Serie A,
one of the.
Serie A would kick the French league's butt. I believe that because I'd be in sports.
But PSG
wins like 4-0 in the first half.
Yeah. But I do think out of England, Germany, Italy, France. Top four. Yeah, exactly. They
France.
Just play
that's
a more.
My point. France, I'm arguing.
Well, no, I see what you're saying, but I think Italy plays a style that Ronaldo's going to be able to go in there and just on day one continue what he was doing in Spain.
Tactical, physical, technical.
Yes.
That's Italian football.
Yeah. And I think that's tailor-made for Ronaldo. I don't necessarily know that he was going to be able to go to Germany and do what he was doing in Spain. I definitely don't think he was going to be able to go to England and do what he was doing in Spain.
I'm going to start a conspiracy theory real quickly. You want to know what's up? He's just buying out 2 years till Beckham gets his new team going down there in Miami. And he's going to break the trend of all the superstars going to L.A. He'll be the first one that goes to Miami.
I can 100%
see that. 2 year out prediction.
100% see that. That's if they even get the team down there now that they're having problem getting their stadium going. All right, Pat. we've bored these guys enough. Let's wrap it up. Guys, we appreciate you coming back. Pat, you want to let them know what they are?
As always, you're smarter than us.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with Bruce. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some stunners.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Find us on social media at @your_smarter on Twitter and @your_smarter_than_us@gmail.com.